Hey, Mike.
Hello, Caleb. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I am doing all right for now.
Yes,
it's going to get quite hot in this office in a moment. So the environment is going to keep this episode relatively brief.
Yeah. What are you drinking today?
So today I did no planning. So I had no like fresh fruits. Actually, I did have a lime. So I decided to make a gin and tonic because it's hot.
Yep.
But it turns out I had no tonic water. I went from like a month ago, I had like all these different kinds of tonic water because I was experimenting with all the different flavors.
Yep.
And I apparently drank them all and I had none. So I decided to pivot into doing ginger ale instead. Ah. And I couldn't find, the only ginger ale I could find was a Canada Dry. And, you know, I'm not an animal, so I'm not going to drink that. But luckily in the back of the fridge, I found a fancy ginger ale, a Bruce Cost or something, some sort of fancy Brooklyn ginger ale. So I'm drinking that with the a little bit of lime, and I'm actually drinking the Nikka coffee gin from the Nikka whiskey, Japanese whiskey place.
Okay.
Very, very good gin. And this is a drink we call a Don't Hurt Franny. It's essentially a gin and tonic with ginger ale instead of tonic water. Or you can think of it as a Moscow Mule with gin instead of vodka. And yeah, it's really good. It's actually quite refreshing, a little sweeter than a gin and tonic.
Yeah.
And that is a very long-winded answer. How about you? What are you drinking?
Well, mine's a lot simpler. I'm just drinking a little bit of rosé in the day. And the theme here is I'm using some potentially rose-colored glasses as we approach these. Some might say I'm using rose-colored glasses as I view this quarter.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I'm not so sure about that. I think that's these are pretty clear.
Well, rosé-colored glasses.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
So there you go. That can mean anything.
Yep. Read into it what you will. So today we are talking about Tesla's Q2 earnings report, their letter, and the earnings call for 2019.
Q2 2019. Yeah. Okay. For correct. People listening in the distant future.
Yeah. All those folks in 2025, they know what happens to Tesla, so they'll be able to judge us quite easily.
When the recordings of the Tesla show get put on the disc that gets attached to the Voyager 3 probe. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. It'll go on one of the Elon Musk Mars missions. So one of the Starhoppers.
Yeah, Starman. Yeah.
So let's jump right into it. Going over the numbers, record deliveries of vehicles at 95,356, which translated to $6.35 billion in revenue, which then drops down to $921 million in gross profit, which is around 7%. Which led to an operating free cash flow of $614 million, which was actually a lot more than folks expected, so we'll talk about that. But ultimately, a total loss of $408 million for the quarter, which was a lot more than folks expected, compared to around 700-ish million from last quarter. So we knew going into the quarter that Elon had guided that, and Tesla had guided that they would still be a loss for the quarter, so analysts and things were expecting a loss. But I think most folks were expecting closer to like $100 million instead of $400 million. So after hours, the stock was down around 10%, and I think it finished down around 13 or 14% after the next day after the market was open. So sort of it wasn't a super rosy picture for folks. And so I wanted to break down a bit of the numbers and sort of how they had so much more free cash flow of 600 plus million, but had a bigger loss than people were expecting. And then we'll talk about some of the details of the letter, for sort of more of the operating part of the business, if that sounds good.
Sounds great.
So the record deliveries, was 95,000 and they produced 87,000. So essentially, they delivered more vehicles than they actually made in this particular quarter, which means they had a good amount of hangover from the previous quarter, a lot of vehicles in transit that were en route to China and Europe. So while they recognize the costs of those in the quarter they're actually delivered, so you have to actually, from GAAP accounting, recognize the revenue and the costs when you sell the product, from a cash point of view, a lot of the cash that they had to spend to make these vehicles had already been spent in the previous quarter. So that was sort of a positive side on the cash. So, 10,000 plus vehicles were already in advanced a bit.
So which is that, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, and then also they drew down inventory quite a bit from a lot of the SNX. So they sold a lot of vehicles they had produced in previous quarters. Mm-hmm. So again, a lot of that cash had already been disgorged from the company to the suppliers. and so now they were able to get the revenue from it. Or so they recognized the revenue, and they also got the cash from the customer. So the cash flows were higher, if that makes sense. So really separating out, when the product is sold, you have the revenue, but revenue doesn't necessarily, and the cost, but the costs don't necessarily mean that the cost, the cash for that cost went out in that quarter. So yeah, there's a little bit of a pull forward.
Yeah, it seems that unless you actually have just a constant rate that you're selling at throughout the entire year, that there's always going to be this weird sort of quarter boundary issues, if I'm understanding it correctly.
Yeah, especially when you deliver more than you produced. So that when you deliver more than you produce, you're going to have a positive effect on your cash flows. And like last quarter, they had really poor deliveries relative to this quarter. And so they had a much bigger loss. They had like a $700 million loss because they also had a lot of fixed costs that weren't made up for by the revenue. So yeah, if you in some cases where they aren't able to get the deliveries out the door, that's really going to hurt their quarters. And so Tesla has been talking about moving to a more consistent delivery window instead of trying to bunch everything up at the end of the quarter to try and smooth things out to get to that more steady state of production and deliveries. But they continue to ramp production. And as a result, they're continuing to be a little bit ahead some quarters and a little behind on others, depending on how they turn on new markets. In the long run, this sorts itself out, but we're going to have these same challenges when Model Y turns on and the pickup turns on, because whole new product, new vehicles being turned on, it's going to increase production dramatically, and deliveries may not always match up. So this is actually going to be an issue in air quotes for Tesla, which makes it just harder to model. It doesn't mean much to the fundamental business, because if you look at four quarters over time, it kind of smooths things out. But on a quarter to quarter basis, this is part of their challenge.
It seems like from the outside, it's really hard to tell, at least from a layperson's perspective, and that might even be generous given my lack of any knowledge whatsoever, but it's really hard to tell how much of this is just accounting problems with this, like trying to, you know, having a lumpy production and sales system that's fitting into like very set quarter boundaries. How much of it is accounting? How much of it is that it's something new? So they're investing a lot of money that's going to like pay off long term, like, you know, the per unit costs will go down long term because they're investing in infrastructure and that sort of stuff, or how much of it is just that they're selling $20 bills for $18 and
right,
and it's just going to eventually like go bankrupt. Like it's really hard to tell, or any sort of combination of these things. It's really hard to tell from the outside.
And I think that's honestly why there's such a dispersion of beliefs about Tesla as a company and as a business, because you're right. At any point in time, you can make the case that any of those three situations is the most likely outcome. That, yes, when you have record deliveries and production, why do you have a $400 million loss?
Yeah.
When in the previous periods, two quarters ago, three quarters ago, you had a profit with less. So what's going on? Does that mean Model 3 is actually not a profitable vehicle? When you look at the details of Model 3's costs, the margins are actually continuing to improve. It's just that the ASP, the average selling price, has gone down a bit as they've introduced the standard range plus, and that's become more popular. And also, Tesla has been adjusting the price of Model 3 because in the US, they're dealing with the federal tax credit step down, going from the $7,500 to being halved and then being halved again most recently and soon and now, going away completely. And so they've continued to reduce the price to try and match sort of the true economic impact of someone buying that vehicle. And it's difficult to tell, are they doing that just to try and reduce the price, or are they doing it, to juice demand? And it's a combination of all those things. And So when you look at the operating side of the business to try and dig at this, because this is one of my fundamental questions as well, is like, is this ultimately a sustainable model? Or are they still in startup-y mode where they're not quite sure if they have fit for the product and the pricing, but they hope to still figure it out? So the question is, are they kind of sustainable right now? So if you look at the operating side of things, so revenue of $6.35 billion, leading to $921 million in gross profit from both the solar and the automotive side, then so that's just like costs and revenue, right? So they had $921 million of profit to spend on everything else they do in the business to prove out whether or not it's economically viable. They spent around $1 billion on operating expenses. So their offices, their people, their research and development, you know, all those sorts of expenses were more than they made in gross profit this quarter. So they had around $167 million loss from operations. But when you look at that compared to last year, at the same quarter, last year, the same quarter, they had the $621 million loss from operations. And the important thing here is this excludes things like the factory and build out of like robots and capital expenditures. So this is just sort of assuming everything is stable. How much did you lose given what you sold and how much it costs to produce that? And so from that point of view, that's a year over year, you look at that, you're like, okay, they are getting more efficient because what's happened is their operating expenses, so their research and development, their sales team, their executive team, the labor that goes into making the cars, the cost that goes into them, not the cost of the cars, but the cost of the people that manufacture the vehicles, those are staying relatively stable at around $1 billion while they continue to sell more cars. And so this is what would generally be called operating leverage, that as you sell more and make more, how much does your, you know, company like headquarters type expenses increase? And Tesla has been doing a better job of getting efficient there. So going from $621 million loss per quarter a year ago to $170-ish million now, that's pretty good, right? Because if they were able to eke out another, you know, $1 billion in revenue and keep those operating expenses relatively similar, they could have easily, you know, you can see a path to getting to $100, $200 million of operating profit. And that's what eventually is going to be the thing that will trickle down to the true economic like profit for the company. And so what's interesting as well this quarter was because they did layoffs last quarter, they had $117 million of what are called one-time restructuring costs. So when you remove that $117 million from the $167, if you could exclude that, it would have been a $50 million operating loss. Now, the problem is if you, like Warren Buffett will say, one-time restructuring costs often aren't one time. And Tesla has had other times when they've done layoffs and have been restructuring costs. So it's not as if you can eliminate it because it was a real economic cost for shareholders, but it's not necessarily structural unless you believe that Tesla will continually have to have layoffs and pay the severance packages and the unemployment benefits and all that. So I'll pause there. What do you think about that as sort of the loop of the actual operations part? Do you, what's your take from that explanation?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think the one thing that jumps out at me though is, so in our world, in the software world, there's the sort of the whole marginal cost economics of software where, you know, once you actually make the software, it doesn't actually cost you much more to sell it, you know, to 100 people, 1,000 people, 1,000,000 people. Same with like, you know, web services and all that stuff. So your profits, your revenues can scale independent of your operating costs, the number of people you have. But something like Tesla, they are actually selling goods and taking, you know, a cut of that as, you know, they're booking that revenue. So it doesn't, I can't look at that and scale it like I could a software company where I can say like, okay, well, we'll just add in, what happens if they sell another billion? But it's not a matter of like with the same resources, they could just sell twice as much. Like they would actually have to staff up a lot more. So there's more of a relationship, I guess, between their operating expenses and their revenue, at least in my understanding of it.
Yeah. And I think this is another big question of how much will Tesla be more like a software company, or will it be sort of more in the middle where it's kind of like an Apple or Amazon, where, you know, Apple's headquarters has increased and the number of employees they have has increased, but it hasn't increased nearly to the same rate that the production of and sales of, you know, devices like iPhone have. And so Apple's operating leverage has continued to increase over time, and so has Amazon's, even though they have to produce, or even though they have to buy more facilities and fulfillment, they do ultimately have positive gross margin on a unit economic basis. It's not as great margins as software. And so when you look at the automotive gross margins, the Teslas are around 18% now. They used to be closer to 25%. And part of this is that S and X are not doing as well. And even in the earnings call, Elon kind of admitted they're not quite sure why they're not doing as well. And when asked, like, is it cannibalization or whatnot, they kind of said, well, it's probably some cannibalization, but we're going to try and figure this out. And he said part of it might be people are waiting for some big refresh. And he was trying to tell people there isn't a big refresh. But
Is there any sort of correlation with other, like, similar vehicles? Like, is it just the general economy people aren't buying as many?
Yeah, the general economy for the general auto market is slumping, especially in the more premium side. So there is that correlation. And I think it's also not unusual for people who are expecting the Model S and X to be the premium vehicle. They don't have the same kind of sleek interior that the Model 3 does.
They look actually a bit dated now compared to the Model 3.
Yeah, and they and so people want them to be refreshed, and Tesla doesn't really seem to be that interested. And Elon, even at the end of the earnings call, sort of said, you know, one reason we keep S and X around is so we can spell sexy. So, like, he, on the earnings call, talked about how they're really not that important, because ultimately when you have Model 3 and Model Y in, and even pickup in full production, Model S and X will be maybe 3 or 4 or 5% of sales. So he was almost sort of joking around that they might just kill the products. He didn't come out and say that, but they sort of were the kindling for getting the company going. And well, now it's not that valuable to them, because there's no path for them to become a million unit program. So why would they invest an equal amount of energy in it as they would for Model Y or Model 3, when those programs still have a lot of legs?
Yeah, and it seems especially strange because, like you say, they haven't been updated. And in my understanding, that car manufacturers that have, like, super premium models, they get all the new stuff first, and then it trickles down to the lesser models. And in Tesla's case, they seem to be doing the opposite, where the super premium models are, you know, they have older technology in them than the cheaper Model 3.
Yeah, exactly. So I think part of it too is that Tesla really does want to get to volume production and get to millions of vehicles produced. And because they still have so many gaps from, you know, a mid-size SUV to a pickup truck, that and their resources for team are still relatively small compared to the incumbents. The S and X are kind of would be like the B team, and they don't even have, like, they just have one team, right? And I think they're kind of more like what Apple had done for a while, where they kind of would just neglect products because they didn't have enough people
to
work
Mac
on them.
Mac Pro, cough.
Exactly, right. And I think that Mac Pro is an apt example, where it is supposed to be the premium product, sort of the halo, like, vehicle/product, but it hasn't gotten much attention because Apple realized it's not the way they're going to, like, continue to grow in the future. And certainly for Tesla, even if they, you know, made S and X amazing and got back to from 15,000 a quarter to 20, you know, getting Model Y out the door another quarter sooner is way better for the terminal value of the company. And so I don't fault them for it, but I know for folks who want S and X vehicles, it is a little sad. But I wouldn't expect Tesla to really do that much with S and X, except when, to your point, it is really the way to test new technologies, potentially. I think it just gets the natural flow over from Model 3. Like they've now used the drivetrains in the newer Model 3s, in the newer Model S's and X's from Model 3, just because they were producing them already. Like might as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the real tragedy for them too is even if you actually took some of the technology, like the whether it's like the computer or the better touchscreen or you know motors, batteries, any of the advances in the Model 3, the real problem is that the Model 3 design-wise is such a departure that even with the latest bells and whistles, the just the design of the S and X looks like old, like previous generation. Like that's kind of the problem.
Yeah, it's like a new case design, and that's like really hard, not just changing out internals.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people want, is they want to see some new exterior adjustments and changes, as well as a new interior. And that is a much bigger program to go change. Right. So I don't think we'll see many revolutionary changes to the S and X. And I think if you're really excited about new vehicles, you should pin your hopes on the Model Y and the pickup. And S and X will continue to sort of get some updates, but I just don't see some major updates there. So moving on the loss from on the loss, one other thing, how do they go from that $167 million loss from operations to the $408 million total loss? Like, where is that extra a little more than $200 million come from? Well, a huge part of that, $172 million, is from interest expense, which is code for the money they have to pay on the debt they have. So they paid more in interest on the debt they carry than they had in loss from their actual like operations, from the team and all the building and all the, you know, everything that it takes to run Tesla, except for building new factories and equipment. All of that was still less than the amount of interest they paid to their debt holders.
That seems super problematic.
That is really it's problematic, and it also shows like a huge area for a way they can improve, because last quarter they did retire a good amount of debt, 900 or so million, but they also raised capital, which doesn't add debt, but they did do another like 800 million to a billion. I don't know the exact figure off the top of my head for more debt. So they've still got many, many billions of dollars of long-term debt that as interest rates continue to, you know, move around, could be more problematic for them. So I think the important thing is, by having them actually have free cash flow of $600 million, their cash position actually increased. And this was like the third or fourth time they've ever had positive operating free cash flow. And so they now have over $5 billion of cash. So they have more cash than they've ever had. And so over time, they really should think about retiring some of this debt, because that's a real cost. They do have to pay that interest, even if it's not being paid for right now in cash, because it's going to come due later.
If I'm looking at that and I'm seeing that they have that much in cash and they have this huge pile of debt that they're paying an enormous amount of interest on, then it seems like the only reason why you wouldn't use that cash to pay down your debt is if you weren't completely confident in your cash flow going forward. Is that too pessimistic?
I think part of it would be, you want to make sure that you have the cash available to potentially, do other things with and have a strong enough cash balance relative to your total revenue. So like they want the percentage of cash relative to their like run rate to be like, 25% or 10%. And if they get down to below $2 billion in cash, things start to get really dire or risky. Mm-hmm. And so even though they have this debt, paying that $172 million, they still generated cash. So on a GAAP basis, they had more loss, but it didn't necessarily mean they actually had to pay that. It's just some of that interest is accruing.
Okay.
And so it was like some of that was a non-cash expense. But when the debt comes due in like 2 years, 3 years, they're going to have a bigger payment, but they expect they'll have, they'll have the ability to pay that off, which they have. They haven't defaulted on debt before, But it's just one thing to reconcile the difference between how can Tesla have such a loss and still generate more cash in a quarter. It's this difference between the debt that is on paper accruing more interest, but they don't pay it until the future. So they didn't talk about the debt on the earnings call. They don't talk about it in the.
Oh, that would be pretty gauche. You know, yeah. We don't like to talk about that.
But it's just meaningful that is now larger than the operating expense.
Yeah.
So over time, if you want to actually get to being really profitable, you have to have enough operating profit to pay for that debt, other income and expenses, which in this period was a lot. Like they had $60 million loss due to currency fluctuations that they didn't hedge. So most large companies will hedge and buy certain types of currencies to offset if the dollar gets stronger or weaker relative to other markets. And as Tesla sells more in Europe and sells more in China, the dollar becomes a bigger impact. And so they had like $60 million of currency fluctuation that went against them. And so these are all just things to sort of point out, like these are not about the reality of do people want to buy Teslas?
Yeah.
Can Tesla make them, like, can they buy parts from suppliers for less than it costs? Like, do they spend too much on their staff and on the production? Like, these are kind of more financial engineering type things that can be sorted out if the company's core economic value is real. And so that's why I pointed out, like, the difference between 167 and 400, like the 400 is the true real loss. But in my mind, the thing I would be caring about is the 167 loss from operations. And how do we get that to be more, how do you get that to be positive? And so they still need to produce more vehicles at better margin to absorb those fixed costs that they have. And to that point, one thing that's really important to recognize is that they have like almost $1 billion on the liability side for deferred revenue. And deferred revenue in Tesla's case is almost all software related revenue for features that they've sold as part of full self-driving. And they did talk about this on the call. And so Zach, their CFO, said, "Note that we continue to defer a significant portion of revenue associated with full self-driving, which will be recognized in future periods upon the release of future features." And Elon even talked about this, that people are discounting that the margins are going to increase pretty dramatically once Tesla has more of the full self-driving features, like the stopping at stop signs, being able to navigate the city streets, roundabouts, you know, all of those sorts of features that they currently don't recognize much of the revenue for. And as the price of full self-driving continues to creep to $8,000, $9,000, $10,000, $11,000, that is money and cash that Tesla is receiving, but they don't recognize it as revenue. And so that's the other way that their cash has continued to grow, even though it's not showing up on the accounting side.
So that money is not counted as revenue, but it is in the $5 billion of cash on hand?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So they can use the cash. They just can't recognize it as real revenue yet. And so they have $1 billion of deferred revenue that if they are able to release those features, they can claim as revenue, and that will help the gross margin. And so this, to your point earlier, circling back, is that this is how Tesla will go from that 17-18% to what Elon in the call says he believes within a year they should be closer to 30%. And if they get to 30%, they would be best in class, best in industry, actually. And so I think that is ultimately the path that Tesla is able to continue to get even more leverage, is having a larger and larger portion of the value of Tesla's be in software, and that the cost of that is going to be pretty much, you know, a few percentage points versus like 80% of physical goods. So that's where it's not able to really be seen on any of the official GAAP accounting, except if you look at deferred revenue, because $1 billion of deferred revenue is pretty good considering they've been selling that full self-driving package for maybe 3 years. So that's like $300 million a year. And not many people are choosing that yet because it doesn't really do anything. So they got this double whammy of being able to recognize that, and then new people choosing to pay for that because it's going to have some value. So that's just one other really important thing for the future value of Tesla that gets them out of the sort of normal automotive, you know, margins, because not many other automakers currently have software packages that are going to unlock that much value.
Yeah, they're just selling floor mats and undercoatings.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I don't know of many others that are actually selling these features that are not that aren't yet available. Like Tesla, and that could be a slam on Tesla that they're selling these features before they're actually available. But the point is, legally, they can't even recognize a lot of that revenue. And this even happened with the iPhone in the early days when they were selling. Remember, you used to have to pay $10 to get an iOS update for like the iPod Touch and the iPhone. I think it was like to iOS 2 or 3. Like it was a $10 upgrade because
they had
recognized all the revenue of the iPhone away.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And so then they needed a way to release new features for the same devices. They had to charge for it. And then they realized, okay, if we start deferring some of the revenue of iPhone and we keep issuing new software updates, then we can get around that accounting challenge and not charge customers. So they kind of hold back some of the revenue and use it over time as they release software updates. So anyways, detail that I think a lot of folks miss that I think is important.
I learned this week that BMW is apparently charging now an annual fee to use CarPlay in things, which seems completely insane. But I guess they're in their own small way trying to also get some of that sweet, sweet software money.
That's true. Yeah. And subscription, no less. So a couple other important things from the note, and then we'll talk about a couple things from the call and then wrap up, is that the Model Y is going to be produced at Fremont, and that the Model Y is still slated to begin production in 2020 in the fall. And that even on the earnings call itself, Elon was saying they continue to believe it will be easier to ramp than Model 3. It shares roughly 3/4 of the same parts as Model 3, and that they have already begun the work at the factory in Fremont to basically produce Model Y. And everyone was like, well, how are you going to fit this in the factory? It's already kind of full. And ultimately what they're doing is many of the areas where they've been storing parts for Model S and X, they're clearing out, moving those to another facility and using that floor space, which was never really that efficient because it was just storing parts, to put in the incremental production lines they need for Model Y. Now, a lot of the stuff they can reuse are things like the paint shop and the stamping facility. And so they'll probably need a new, body welding facility and then final assembly. But final assembly may be able to share some of the same parts, same line as Model Y or Model 3 because S and X do. It's not quite clear, but ultimately they feel confident they can do it at Fremont. And so that's underway. But fall of 2020 is a year and a quarter away. I mean, it's still a good time away. So I remember about a year out, we started seeing the Model 3s driving around. So I still think we're probably another quarter until we hear that they've locked the design, and we'll start to see the beta cars or the alpha cars. Who knows? We'll see if they accelerate that program. But I think they didn't seem concerned about it. But I'm very curious if it's going to be a similar situation to Model 3, where it's this massive, massive issue, or if they really have learned how to produce vehicles at a higher scale because they've actually been doing it, and that because they are actually using a lot of the same parts, that those parts have already been validated and tested in real life. So I'm more optimistic than I was for Model 3 because they are producing at higher volume. But
then again, they are doing it at higher volume. So there's a lot more going on at the factory right now than they did have before.
Exactly. So, how much will they sacrifice from Model 3's production to steal people from to ramp Model Y? And how much will it hurt the business from reduced Model 3? And I think that's why they need to continue to basically automate as much as they can on Model 3, even if it doesn't improve production rate. It just gives them more overhead, more headroom to take people out so that they can dedicate those people to, you know, fix the problems with Model Y that inevitably will pop up. The other important thing, too, is that the Shanghai Gigafactory, they showed some photos in the letter of what it looks like inside now. So the shell is pretty much done, which was quite impressive. But now they've got stamping machines inside. They've got the KUKA robots and the FONK robots inside. They still have plastic wrap on them, so they're not, you know, being validated yet. But then they also have the cells that they use for the production of stamping or welding the body parts together. So they showed a few photos of that, and they're targeting that still for the end of the year to be producing, you know, cars rolling off the line of Shanghai at maybe 1 or 2,000 a week, which would be, and those will all be Model 3s just for China. So that's super impressive. I'm really excited to see that, because being able to have that local production in a market that has some of the highest tariffs, that is one of the fastest growing markets and the total largest market for electric vehicles, is great for Tesla. And they own all the IP for that, where every other domestic automaker from the US has had to do joint ventures. So Tesla is in a unique spot in China from a technology point of view and ownership of their intellectual property, as well as the profits that they make in China.
Cool. And you said that's going to be Model 3, right?
Model 3.
Not and the Model.
Also, it will do Model Y also. Okay. Yeah, but to begin with, it's just going to be Model 3 because it'll be this year. Right.
Model San.
Yeah.
Or I don't know how to say Y. So I don't know. But I think San is 3.
And then the other thing on the software side, Autopilot, the next big feature that's going to be coming out, which we all sort of know about, is this enhanced summon, which will take you take the vehicle from a parking spot and find you in a parking lot.
Every time I hear enhanced summon, I think enchanted summon, and it sounds like kind of Disney-ish. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
No, I hear you.
For some reason, it just sounds more magical. Like there's going to be like sparkles and stuff.
Like a little forest or little gnomes or something driving it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it sort of is.
Well, what's funny about it is how this has been delayed so much. I mean, months and months from Elon tweeting about it to it becoming available. And I think the problem with enhanced summon, from what I've seen, is I just can't think of that many times when I would actually really use it. So I walk downstairs and I walk maybe 30, 40 feet to my parking space in this in the apartment complex I live in. And that's not that bad. I do sometimes use summon to pull it out of the spot, but it's not necessarily faster. I just kind of do it for fun to try it. So it could potentially pull out and come find me, but I need to have line of sight. So I need to walk down the stairs and pull up the phone and have it back out. So in that time I'm waiting for it to come to me, I could have just walked to it. So it doesn't rain here.
You're starting to sound un-American here.
I'm just saying.
But also you got to remember that this is might be more geared towards like more Phoenix, less Palo Alto.
Yeah, it could. Yeah, for more extreme weather situations. But ultimately, like obviously, it's for being able to navigate this class of road, which is a parking lot. Like, that is going to be important. And the reverse of it, I think, is much more interesting, which is the next feature for enhanced summon is you get out of the car and it goes and finds a parking spot. Like that, I would, when it works, I would use. Because being dropped off at the front of a busy, not necessarily, you know, lots of cars driving around, but like at a movie theater or at the mall or something like that, like parking in those places and walking the long way and back is not necessarily that much fun. But again, if you need line of sight, it's going to be limited utility, but it's certainly a necessary step along the path to full self-driving. It's just not something I'm particularly going to get a ton of value out of from the way I can imagine it. However, the other feature they talked about in the letter was that they're also making progress on the next feature that will come after enhanced summon, which is stopping at stop signs and traffic lights. And they mentioned that the feature is currently in shadow mode in the fleet, and that, you know, there are tens of millions of instances around the world already that have triggered this. And I think we've talked about this a lot, that stop signs and traffic lights is most likely going to be the next sort of full self-driving feature. And even in my own use of this, I have seen that now when you have autopilot on and you're going towards a red light, and there's no car in front of you, and you don't disengage, a traffic light shows up where the traffic, where the speed limit sign normally is on the display, and it's red. And so when the feature first came out of this auto detection of the light that was sort of a safety feature, it would just show you the warning of like, put your hands on the wheel. But in recent versions, it started showing you the actual icon of a traffic light. And so they've been using that software feature of a, as a safety feature to kind of show that they are able to detect the lights. I haven't seen the symbol for the stop sign in any of my usage yet, but I don't doubt that. Basically, I'm saying I don't doubt that they are actually doing it in shadow mode. And this is one I think will be quite useful. And I think for sure it will roll out first as a safety feature to alert you when it notices a stop sign or stop light without actuating. And then sort of like how Navigate on Autopilot needed confirmation. So it'll do that first. And then once they are confident again that it's working really, really well, then they will actually let you use Autopilot on those side streets and have it stop at stop signs and stop lights without you having to do it, if that makes sense. So warning first as sort of a as a helper, and then actually telling you you can trust it to stop. And I think that is really going to blow people's minds. Like, that is something that I don't believe any other car has today in being able to stop at those things. And that's going to make people get really excited about autopilot again, where today I think it's become more common that people expect it to be able to drive on the highways. And other vehicles have pretty good lane keep assist, like Super Cruise and the Nissan ProPilot and things like that.
Ask your doctor about ProPilot.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. What other questions did you have, Mike, that you're, you know, thinking about or curious if Tesla talked about, or things that are on your mind about Tesla's future?
What were the big crazy Elon things, and did they involve tunnels?
Oh, he didn't talk about tunneling. Some of the big Elon moments were that someone asked about the battery investor day. So they originally had said that was maybe a few months away, but now he's saying it's more like 6 months away. And the reason is they want to actually talk about a plan to get to a terawatt of battery production. So the Gigafactory is supposed to be able to do 35 gigawatts of production, and they want to get to a terawatt.
Without renaming the factory?
Well, that's the question, is how are they actually going to do this? But they're coming up with a plan to get to a terawatt of capacity, which is, 30x what the Gigafactory can do.
Yeah, 30x peak capacity.
Yeah. So I feel like that, and basically at the battery day, they're going to also, he said he wants it to be a show and tell. And so what I expect is they will actually have their own new Tesla chemistry. They'll have their own Tesla cells instead of using Panasonic. They will talk about new battery packs that are more efficient and more dense. And they will talk about their production machines they've invented to produce that much cell capacity and where they're going to build this. And I think they'll just expand the Gigafactory in Nevada dramatically, because they own tons of acreage around it still that they haven't utilized. And so I think they will sort of talk about how they're going to become even more vertically integrated and basically be taking Panasonic slowly out of the process and making their own cells. So basically the entire battery technology is their own. Now, the other interesting thing about a terawatt of production is that would imply like almost 20 million vehicles.
Is that so? Yeah, I'm sorry. Is that annual?
Yes, annual.
Okay, that's an annual number.
And so that would mean like way more vehicles than Tesla has anywhere near the near-term sort of plans for, which also makes me think that they're going to start becoming a supplier to other manufacturers.
Weren't they already supplying someone?
They
was
had
it Mercedes?
Done that. Yeah, they used to supply Mercedes, and they did a deal with Toyota at one point. I just think that they will eventually sell these packs and probably charge quite a good amount on them. So their vehicles will have the advantage of the lower cost, but ultimately they can continue to advance the actual mission of making, you know, transport more sustainable.
Does the does the Gigafactory in, or the, is it a Gigafactory?
The, yeah, whatever the factory. There are 28 gigawatt hours right now.
Okay, so the one that they just, or that they're building in Shanghai to build cars, is that, do they have battery production capability in Asia, or are they building it in Nevada and shipping them over?
They wouldn't talk about it. Someone asked, so what's the deal with, how are you going to source cells in China? And they were really kind of cagey. So I think they will, they said we have capacity arrangements all in place, but I think they didn't want to say anything because ultimately, in the near term, they'll probably be sourcing from Panasonic in Japan, which is what they do for SNX. They import those cells. And then at some point, they will install these Tesla production lines at that Gigafactory. Because ultimately, as Elon and the team has talked about, they want the Gigafactories to eventually be able to produce everything. So the batteries, the cells, the battery packs, and the vehicles all in one building. And so I think they didn't want to talk about that because they're not going to do a big flashy partnership like they did with Panasonic in China, because the stopgap is to just source some cells and build the packs themselves like they do in Gigafactory 1. But eventually they will have the Chinese Gigafactory expand and they will produce locally their own cells.
Got it.
Yeah. So that was sort of the biggest Elon thing. That he said was sort of radical. Also talking about the SNX and sort of how that's not really, you know, it's like 4 or 5% of the volume of 3 and Y. That, you know, full self-driving. One other thing on full self-driving, Elon said, was like they expect to offer it everywhere, even in China. The only place they can't offer it now, if it was ready, would be the EU, because there's some rules that were put in place a few years ago that they need to stand. Need to change. But from a technical standpoint, they're building it to support the EU. It's just they actually have to get some laws changed in Europe. But every other territory, from their viewpoint, they will be able to get approval for the full self-driving functionality, which, you know, they haven't really ever talked about the regulation very much, except to say, like, we'll work with regulators and we believe that when we can show them the statistical safety of it, we'll be able to get approval. They had never really mentioned this EU rule, and they didn't mention the specific rule, so it's something I need to dig into, but I thought that was kind of intriguing.
They just want to extract a concession from Tesla. They want like a Gigafactory Stockholm or something.
Well, and they also talked about how hopefully by the end of the year they'll pick a site for the European Gigafactory.
There you go. That'll probably help.
That may be part of it, yeah, is doing that. And otherwise, he said that, you know, in next quarter, Q3 will most likely be a little profitable, maybe break even. But Q4 will be excellent, very strong. Q1 of next year will be tough. Q2 will be not as bad, but still tough. And then Q3 of next year and Q4 of next year will be incredible. And if you back out to those dates and try and think about what is he thinking about that leads to that, you know, Q4 of this year will be the China Gigafactory will be producing. And their Q4s have typically been pretty solid. And then also when you look at Q3 and Q4 next year, that should be Model Y coming online pretty well. So Q3, the back half of Q3, if everything's on schedule, they'll be selling Model Y. And then Q4 would be the first full quarter of strong Model Y. If it stays on schedule. So
I don't know. If they say fall 2020, I'm going to assume that means the very last day of fall. I think historically how it's worked is they expand it out to be the most generous possible interpretation of their estimate.
It really depends on when they plan to start production versus when they say they're going to have volume deliveries, because what they're claiming now is that deliveries, like they'll have meaningful deliveries in queue. In the fall of 2020, but that they're internally aiming for the summer start of the production. Gotcha. So they're not really anchoring on the start of production as the point with external communications because of what happened with Model 3, I think, because, you know, delivering 50 and a quarter isn't really meaningful. So we'll see what happens. But I would say generally, like, the earnings call itself was pretty tame. Elon was actually reading from a lot more prepared remarks on paper than he usually does. Many of the questions were quite detail-oriented about the financials for this particular quarter versus asking about, like, how — no one really asked, how's full self-driving going? Like, okay, you've talked about the robo-taxis 4 or 5 months ago, full self-driving chip. Like, are you actually going to release meaningful full self-driving features this, you know, before the end of the year? You've got, like, two more quarters. So how's that going? No one asked about that. No one really asked, okay, tell us about how the Model Y program's going. Like, remember before Model 3 came out, all the quarters, every quarter, all the analysts were talking about was, how's Model 3 going? How's the part sourcing going? Like, and all the letters were about that. And now that they have Model 3, the analysts are a little distracted and just focusing on the current financial performance of the business, which is what most financial analysts want to do. So, but it's not the most interesting thing if you're trying to figure out how valuable will Tesla be in the future, because when you look at it a quarter over quarter basis, like we talked about at the top of the show, they still have a lot of fluctuations. They still have a lot of stuff that they're sorting through and changing. And so it's not always going to be a smooth ride. But when you look at some of these charts for, like, vehicles delivered, or you look at, you know, revenue over time by quarter for the past, like, 5 years, it's, like, pretty remarkable. And if you look at that on a yearly basis, it's like this amazing exponential. And this is one thing Elon did talk about in the call, was, like, I think to try and soften the negativity around the particular quarter, is that if you just look at how Tesla has performed year over year over year and where they're at now, it's pretty incredible how they have continued to be basically doubling the fleet every single year. And they continue to expect for the upcoming years to do 50 to 100% growth of vehicle volume. And so they believe they can get Model 3 to, like, 750,000 cars a year run rate, that Model Y should be somewhere around 1 million. And then you add in, so that's like 1.75 million vehicles. Then you add in another, you know, 100 to 200,000 for Model S and X, and you add in another 500,000 for the pickup, maybe 1 million. You start to get to some pretty big numbers, and that's before they introduce an even cheaper vehicle, or by that time they expect they'll have the robo-taxis, so it's kind of all moot. So, like, no one even asks about the robo-taxi stuff. Like, okay, if this is all just a prelude for a super high margin transportation business, it's kind of like worrying about did Amazon in 98 sell enough Harry Potter books to make the quarter. It's like,
yes, they did.
They did, but that is not what that team was focused on. How are we going to sell 10% more books this next quarter? Like, they were starting to think about, how do we sell every product? And then 5 years later, thinking about, how are we going to turn into Amazon Web Services? And so, I don't know. If you think of Tesla as an Apple or as an Amazon in terms of their long-term scope, talking about the details of, like, why S and X are off by a few thousand units is pretty silly. But I understand analysts have to make predictions by quarter. But if you're making predictions for the next 5 years, those are not the questions you would ask. Those are not the questions I'm particularly interested in. And so I've actually been more disappointed in the earnings calls recently, because they have Model 3 to benchmark against. And so that focuses them, where a year or two ago, when Model 3 was still really early, they were talking more about the future, and it was more interesting. So, to me personally,
I guess for earnings calls, I guess less exciting is probably a good thing.
Potentially, yeah. But I always see these as a way to extract information from Tesla, because they want to paint as positive a picture of the future as possible to get people excited. But I think they've reined that in a bit, and I wish they hadn't for personal reasons. But I think as a business, it's probably good, because they've been really bad at setting expectations, for sure. I don't think anyone could say that Tesla has been good at setting expectations with the financial community, for sure.
That seems like a pretty fair statement.
Yeah.
Well, if nothing else, I can say that the sheer, like, in just in switching to anecdotal mode, the sheer number of Model 3s I see on the road, I would almost be willing to say that they have eclipsed the Prius, or the number of Prii that are on the road around here. They are everywhere.
Yes. 73,000. I mean, 73,000 produced, and they did 78,000 delivered globally in 3 months. Like, it's massive. And especially here, it's so concentrated in Palo Alto and the Bay Area. I mean, I'll go times where I'll be three cars, the only three cars around me on the highway are Model 3s. And now that I'm driving a Model 3, like, I don't even get that excited about seeing them, but I still notice them. And for me, driving it, it's still like, it's just an amazing, amazing vehicle. And I think if you just ask people who have a Tesla, like, what is the next vehicle you want to buy? I think they must have one of the highest, like, intent for repurchase out of any vehicle. And that, when I think about them as a fundamental, like, is this going to work from a demand point of view? The other thing they said was, like, they're already ahead of the order book for Q2 in Q3 for this point in the quarter. So they have more orders than they had this point last quarter, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So they're happy with that because they're like a few months, you know, they have kind of visibility into the future because they get the order and it takes them a little bit of time to produce it. Plus, they've pretty much run through all the reservations. So all of the demand they're seeing is organic. It's not from the reservation book anymore. Right. And they said that was for last quarter as well, that Q2 was pretty much all net new orders, which goes to the organic demand. And I think, to your point, as more people see these, more people take their coworkers and friends on drives, it continues to expand. You know, it doesn't hurt that they continue to get like Motor Trend best vehicle with the Model S. They get Euro NCAP like safety ratings in Europe that are the best ever. All the signs for Model 3 as a product are extremely positive. So that is the current economic driver, is Model 3, and it's a great product. It now falls to Tesla to be able to deal with the ambition they have and do it in a financially responsible way. But it seems as if the sort of the ongoing run rate, the production rate of Model 3 is sort of at a place to pay for the overall operation. And now as they turn on Model Y in the same general factory with only a few billion dollars of capital expenditures, that may actually be able to start pumping out the profits ahead of full self-driving. So that would be my like midterm expectation, is that they sort of stay stable, they get profitable for the next year, minorly, but Model Y is when you'll see the big inflection point, because that's the next step change in production. And, you know, they don't necessarily have to hire more receptionists, and they don't necessarily have to hire that many more engineers for full self-driving and all these other programs, because they're kind of staffed. They're pretty well staffed in many of those teams, but incrementally producing more vehicles, especially as they're more automated, will get them that profit per unit and the overall profit up. So my sense is that Tesla is on the upswing again, but it may be still a little bit rocky as they keep turning on these new countries and deliveries are a little bit out of whack, especially as the final tax credit goes away.
Gotcha. How would you translate that into your letter grade?
I don't know. I would sort of give this quarter a C+.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mainly because they telegraphed them having a loss, but not to the degree that the analysts were expecting. And I think that's where and this is like a minor detail, but the investor relations team could have done a better job at seeing how dispersed the expectations were and trying to communicate better what the reality was going to be, just so that the stock doesn't have, like, it doesn't help that the day afterwards, people on CNBC and Bloomberg and all these networks are talking about Tesla has another massive loss. Is it going to go bankrupt? Like, there's already enough pressure. Like, Tesla doesn't need to have such big expectation mismatches with the financial community. But ultimately, I think that comes down to like Elon doesn't really care, that in the long run, he does, like, he's not buying more shares, he's not selling his shares. So it doesn't matter unless in the long run the company isn't worth more. and he doesn't really care what happens to shareholders in the near term, which is, you know, that's a perfectly reasonable point, but I don't think it is like require much of his energy to tell the investor relations team to like help the analysts get better at their predictions.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. One other thing, I guess, before we end is now that I do have my Tesla, I have a referral code. And so for anyone who is planning to buy a Model 3, S, or X, you can get 1,000 miles of free supercharging. I get some free supercharging. So for the very first time on the show, Mike, do you mind if I share my referral code for folks?
No, go right ahead. Let's finally, 102 episodes in, let's cash in on this.
It is Caleb80748.
Did you get to pick that? Is that meaningful?
It was just assigned.
8074 B-O-L-B. No, B-O-L. I can't do my leet speak translation.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe it means nothing.
We'll put a link in the show notes and I would be super
appreciative. What was it again before I just actually confused everyone there?
It's Caleb80748.
All right.
807, yeah. I've had like four already, which is amazing. It's super cool.
Wow.
One of them's already been delivered. I think it's just a really, it just feels nice when people use that code. I mean, you don't get nearly as much stuff anymore. They've really reduced the program. So I don't really mind if you have a personal friend you want to use or anything, but it is cool just seeing that we have listeners who are buying the vehicles and seeing what kind of rate of one thing that's neat about it is I get to see when the car was ordered, and then I'm screenshotting that, and then I'm also screenshotting when it gets delivered, so I can kind of personally track what the time from delivery to order is.
Do people get a tweet for this as well, or?
Oh, I'll tweet them if they want.
You're gonna hype it up?
I get the first name of the person, and if you tweet at us that you used a code, we will most likely retweet you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tweet that you use the code. And then once you get your delivery, send a photo to our Twitter account with you and your new baby. And we'll retweet that as well.
Yeah. So you can follow us on Twitter at The Tesla Show. You can go to our website, theteslashow.com. And we're also on Reddit at r/theteslashow. Did I miss anything?
That was good. Awesome. You want to say what was the code again?
No, it's Caleb80748.
80748. I should write that down. All right.
You should tweet it every day. I mean,
I don't. Nuts. I haven't tweeted in like a year. I'm off of social media.
Yeah, not so
much. I feel much better.
Yeah, it's pretty good. All right, Mike. Well, we will talk again the next time there's some meaningful Tesla news that tickles our fancy.
Yeah. Well, and we still have to do your Tesla delivery impressions.
So, I will. Yeah,
hopefully you're recording those all down in your dream journal.
I do have a little notes journal for it. I do.
Excellent. All right.
All right, well, I'll talk to you later, Mike.
All right, bye.